It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are both here today in studio, as usual, and we will be for the next hour. And hopefully it'll be worthwhile for everybody, because if you have any questions that you would like answered about anything to do with finances, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. I would like to welcome everybody back, all the regulars. You know we need you. And if you're new to the show, try to stick around for the whole hour. And we promise you we'll do our best to teach you something between us and the callers. And you never know just how much fun we could have. Might even be profitable if you can put it to work in the market. Speaking of put it into work in the market was working for us this week instead of against us. At least in the beginning. Well, actually, it ended that way, too.
No, so. It was one up day, one down day, one up day, one down day.
Okay.
One up day.
So it's a little schizo.
Yeah.
But the up days are really good.
Yeah.
Wound up. Anyway, we'll be doing all that. We'll have a trivia question, as usual, right after the first break. And you just never know what we might get into today. I got a stack of stuff so high that I don't even know where to start. You might, too, for all this.
I do. I have a bunch of stuff.
Oh, you're going to do the classification thing today?
I forget to it, yeah.
Okay, well, that's fun. This one, you all like this if we do get to it today, because it's talking about different types of investors and different types of clients, and you can see where you fit into all of this.
Well, no, it's different types of investors, because most of them we would never take on as a client.
You have a point there, absolutely.
Because they're too difficult to work with.
You show them the door and tell them there's coronavirus in the office or something.
Exactly.
But that's a topic for a little later. And right now, I think the best way to start this, since everybody's in kind of a good mood today, because it looks like the hurricane's going to miss us a bit. Oh, I do have one thing I want to do first. I do want to recognize the passing of Herman Cain.
That was such a bummer.
Yeah, it was. And speaking of the virus, 74 years old and compromised by at least one bout with cancer. But I got the pleasure to meet him, had the pleasure of meeting him in 2012 when it was at the time, not only was he running, he was leading the Republican PAC for the nomination before they canceled him. And most everybody knows that story, I think. But he was really a force. He was just a wonderful guy to meet and to listen to. And we were guests of the radio station I was working at the time. And went down there and we heard the stump speech, which, of course, he does with no notes or lecterns or anything. He walks the stage and talks to everybody, and he had it all down. And it was during his 999 time, so he was all pumped up about that. And it was just great, and we miss him. And, of course, Jacksonville's really familiar with Herman because of all the hours he spent on the radio. You tend to feel like you're right at home. So shucky ducky, Herman. Best to your family, I guess. All right, a good week in the market. You can tell us about it.
Yeah, there'd been a lot of talk about a tech bubble recently. And so what happened, tech went up again this week. But at the same time, I think we kind of put the bubble talk to rest to a degree. It's not because they're of the run-up, but really just because it's hard to have a bubble when you have earnings as good as they did.
Well, isn't that the truth?
For most of the, I mean, so there was one exception, Alphabet, which is Google. Yeah. They had a miss on their ad revenue and actually a decline for the first time in the company's history because of COVID. But I expect that to be a blip. And the market seemed to also, they were down about 2%, I think, on the day they announced.
Whoopee.
Yeah, not a big deal. But the other earnings that came out this week were really, really good. And the company's traded higher as a result of that. So a bubble is when valuations are not justified and when you get a run-up and people can justify it because the earnings are so solid, that is not considered a bubble. So hopefully we will not see a bubble pop on this go-around. Those earnings drove the NASDAQ 3.7% higher on the week and to a gain of almost 20% on the year. The S&P also gained this week up about 1.7%, while the Dow was off just slightly at 0.2%. Some other interesting...
That was able, by the way, to get the S&P positive for the year.
Yeah, just barely.
But we got it back so far.
Yep.
get the Dow back there, we'll be doing something.
That's right. There were some other interesting results from the week. There's a continued divergence between growth stocks and value stocks. It's been going on for quite a while, years really, but it continued this week. Growth stocks were largely up more than 1% this week, while value stocks actually fell closer to 2%.
Yeah.
And that 3% spread isn't huge on a weekly basis, but considering how long it's been going on, it's I don't know if it's the widest divergence in history, but it's got to be close.
It'll be close. And you know what happens on that? When you get the value stocks so low price that their yield goes up, because those are the ones that pay dividends,
mm-hmm.
and their yield gets just so high that all of a sudden everybody takes note and says, oh, well, I'm going to shift some of my growth money over there, take the profit over there, put it here, and let it run up. So it'll change. I just can't tell you what day month.
There is an alternative way to solve that, and that's for growth stocks to plummet back down to where value stocks are. So we're really hoping for the first scenario to happen, especially since we tend to be value-oriented.
Yep.
That divergence was also seen amongst sectors this week. We had energy down 5% and down almost 40% this year.
Doesn't seem possible.
Crazy. Exxon did not post great results. They had a...
Didn't hurt their stock, though.
It wasn't too bad. They were still in the 40s, I saw. But
yeah, but
I guess
the reaction
expected
on the day was, ho-hum.
The other sectors in the red included materials, financials, industrials, healthcare, and consumer staples. Tech led the way higher, followed by communication services and consumer discretionary. The U.S. was actually one of few countries to see growth this week, as European stocks were largely down. Spain was off almost 5%, and the rest of the EU down between 2 and 4%. China posted a nice 2.6% gain, while Brazil and Canada were the only other markets with weekly gains, interestingly enough.
China's posting increased GDP numbers.
Right.
I'm not saying necessarily that they're experiencing them. I'm saying they're posting them.
Well, it is what it is. It's all we have to go off is what they tell us.
And, of course, the COVID virus is no threat.
No, not there. Commodities were mixed, with oil and natural gas falling, which has been the trend, and gold and silver posting strong weekly gains, which has also been a recent trend we've talked about a little bit recently.
About time.
It has been quite a while. Bonds posted modest weekly gains across the board. So people are still pouring money into bonds
despite the high
prices. So
I don't get it.
Safety, I guess.
But
there is no yield.
What's safe about bonds right now?
Well,
when yields start to go up, what's going to happen? They're going to fall?
Of course, but you know, it's the alternative is, do you buy Exxon for the dividend and then it drops 5% in a week?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there isn't really a good place to get yield right now.
Sure isn't.
I've got a bunch more that I'd like to get to.
Yeah, a couple things I want to mention too after the break. Actually, I can sneak some in before we go and then you can finish up. One of them is the bull-bear spread. Well, this means the number of people who are bullish on the market versus the number of people who think it's going to go down. And that spread is now astronomical because the bullish sentiment is all the way down to 20.2% of the public. And the bears are up to 48.4%. And what that means to us mortals is that historically, that has been a great harbinger for the next year in the market.
It has.
So based on that alone, if you could eliminate all other things out there, which you can't or you shouldn't, if that were just the sole indicator, it's going to be a bang-up year. All right, we'll take a quick break and be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have our trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. We've been talking up some tech this morning, and with good reason. So I got a tech question for everybody today. Apple Computer not only came out with fabulous sales and earnings, and I'm so glad I was speaking about Tim Cook taking his place in history, I guess, as one of the great CEOs, because what did he bring it home this time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people love the 11s. I was telling Sarah this morning what's happening. They're trading it in. They were keeping their phones for a long time, 5, 6, 7, 8s, all of those. They were keeping. The 10 didn't impress a lot of those people, but the 11 for some reason did. I suspect it's mostly because enough time had gone by. But iPhone 11 sales were just off the charts. It was unbelievable. Anyway, One of the announcements that they did make was that they're going to split their stock again, and this was not the first time. This time it's going to be 4-to-1, and I'll let Adam comment on what that's going to mean to the stock indexes that include it. I won't do that here because I'm just doing the trivia, but I went back to the earliest days of Apple. Although they debuted, they IPO'd in 1980, they didn't start on this tear that they've been on with the splits and so on until until 1987. So my question today to everybody is, had you bought one share of Apple on January 2nd, 1987, how much would you have September 1 after this next split? How many shares would you have? In other words, how much has that single share grown through all the splits over the years? It's a whole number. They don't do anything fractionally. So. And it's more than 2. And it's more than 8.
All right.
Okay. So, boy, I've narrowed it down a lot now, haven't I?
Yeah. I can talk briefly about market cap and how that will and how the weightings will be affected. And the answer is, in most market cap weighted indexes, which I think are the preferable way to do these things, there won't be any change because the market cap does not change with the stock split. Right.
The stock price will fall by 75%,
right?
But you'll have 4 times as many shares. You'll have exactly what you had before the split,
and exactly the same market cap and overall. Overall. Now, when it comes to the Dow, that changes
a little bit
because of the price weighting, which I think is a very stupid way to do things.
But we've always done it this way.
Right, we have, but maybe it made sense a long time ago, but not today. That 4-for-1 stock split actually diminishes the influence on the Dow. And in fact, it takes it from about 10% down to about 2.7% of the index. So now the largest company in the world has less influence than the other companies in the index. How does that make any sense?
Well, it does not to me, but the index itself has had a tremendous run based on Apple.
Sure.
Because it's been rising so quickly. And if the growth of the stock price and the company is going to slow down, then the net effect on the Dow will probably be a positive thing overall, let other people have more input. But if you look at somebody like Amazon with a stock price like that, they're out of whack. So the whole thing has no chance of being logical.
No.
Because it's ill-designed.
It is. I really think they need to go back and redesign it and look at the original. If they want to keep that price weighting, go back to the original price and do the weighting based on that.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
Yeah, I don't know how you would do it exactly.
Mechanically, but it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and it's by convention among people, including like us, but investors everywhere. Somebody says, how'd the market do? The answer is going to be what the Dow did. 99% of everybody's going to answer you about the Dow, even though what the market did is much closer to what the S&P 500.
Yeah, exactly. It makes no sense. Nope. But that's another topic that I...
That's certainly not anything I'm going to worry about.
No, I won't either. We were talking about earnings a little bit, and so energy, we mentioned, did not look so good, but the season as a whole is going very well. 79% of companies reporting have beaten on earnings, and 69% are beating on revenue. That earnings number is close to a record high, which is crazy.
Yep.
And the revenue number is not quite a record high, but it's still really strong if you look back over recent seasons. It's really good.
Yeah, it's the soft bigotry of diminished expectations.
Perhaps, but with all the uncertainty, it could have been a lot worse. So
that is absolutely true.
The guidance being given by companies has been overwhelmingly positive as well. The highest beat rate by sector is, of course, technology at 90%, while communication services is the lowest at 57%. On revenue, tech, once again, the highest at 88.3%, utilities the lowest at 16.7%. And then in terms of forward guidance, you may have guessed by now, but tech is also leading the way there at 28%, giving upward revisions to their forward guidance.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you today?
Great. You?
Hanging in there.
Good.
I'm going to try to attempt an answer to the question.
Good.
All right. Let me just be sure about the question.
Okay.
If we had one share at the beginning of 87,
yep.
how many shares do we have after this last split of 4-for-1?
That is precisely correct.
All right, I'm going to say 224.
And why would you say that?
Because I think there were 3 2-for-1 splits. Then I think in 2014 there was a 7-for-1 split. And this last split would be 4-for-1.
You have an excellent memory. And you can do math in your head.
Yeah.
Which probably has
one
to do with
the excellent memory. One of the few things I could do in my head is math. That's true.
It is indeed 224. Now, some things I haven't told you yet that might be interesting. You would then have, based on the closing price yesterday, those 224 shares would be worth $23,802. Guess what you would have paid for that one share in 87?
On a
dividend adjusted basis.
There's a few stocks that would you'd have quite a bit of money.
Yep.
I'd be curious to know Amazon. Maybe I'll do that next week. would you gentlemen know how many splits they've had Amazon over the years?
I do not know offhand. But Adam might be pulling it up right now.
I don't know that they have.
They have been averse to splitting.
I don't think they have, but we can go back and look.
There's one of the ones that like to put a feather in their cap for their high stock price, which is not always a good idea. But that $23,800 worth of Apple would have cost you 31 cents.
That is a good investment.
Isn't that something? I can't even figure the percentage growth on that one. It's just
it's
incredible.
Up there. No doubt.
I didn't have enough zeros on my calculator.
If I could ask you guys your opinion, because you're very astute at what you do. I heard on a business channel the other day that the split that Apple just did would be advantageous to people getting into it, because when any company splits their stock and puts it to a lower amount, that there's more demand for it.
That is the theory.
That used to be more important than it is now.
Right.
Because of the fractional share purchase.
There's a number of reasons people say that. Historically, I do believe that was correct. Today, I have my doubts as to whether it's correct. I think that Apple is bought as part of ETFs so often, in fractional shares so often, there's just so much demand for it out there. I don't think that the split really does that much anymore, but it does keep it your numbers lower for people who still like to buy in round lots of 100, and therefore 100 at 75% of the cost of what it used to be does make that a little bit more palatable. So I have my doubts as to how good that theory is today, but it definitely used to be, it was true at some points in history.
Well, there's another theory too, and I don't think this is actually provable, but I know a lot of people are devoted to it. And this one goes, wait till the stock splits and then buy some, because it starts a tendency to go back to its old price, even after
just
the split.
Psychological.
Yeah, psychologically, value of that, people look at that lower price. And I also think in Apple's case, it's kind of window dressing, because Apple's always had a reputation for doing, they're the snootier ones, things cost more and they're flashy and all that. I think a stock price is down out of the stratosphere probably appeals to more people as well. So all these things are unprovable by us, but they certainly could come into play.
But when you're evaluating it, I don't think you should take that into account too much. I think you should look at the fundamentals of the company rather than the price of their stock.
Yeah, my question is, how long can they keep this up? And you know what? We say
it's
that
been
every
going
quarter.
On a long time.
But other thing they're doing very well, excuse me just a second, one thing that you've probably heard us say before is they're switching a lot over into services, and the services are repetitive every month or every year, every whatever.
Yeah.
And if you look at the overall sales due to the services, there were a couple billion this time, and the profit margin is very good on those. And I think this is another reason that Cook is doing such a good job with the company. The services are where it's at in the long run. All of those things come into play, and wow, what a quarter they had.
I heard another gentleman say down here that follows the markets that they retain 98% of their customers.
Wow.
That's incredible.
That is. Yeah, you could be you could try a long time to find a product that was
actually they
that
had
loyalty.
A 98% satisfactory rating with wow. their customers.
Either one of those numbers would be off the charts for any other company.
That's the way I feel about them, though, and that's the way I feel about my Lexus too. Even though it's ancient, but I love it. All right, we got to run. Thank you. I'm going to put you on hold so that Alan can get your address and so on.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. And we have Bosco on the line, but Bosco, I'm up against a hard break in about 15 seconds. So rather than setting up your question, because we won't have time, we'll take you the second we come back in after the short break. So hang on if you will. Anyway, we're going to take a little time off here and do some bill paying. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we promised right before the break that we had a caller on the line and we would get right to him. So, good morning, Bosco.
Hey, y'all.
Thanks for waiting.
Hope everything's good for you there. I understand you got a little bit of a wind condition coming in on you.
Yeah, it's a rumor at this point.
Yeah.
Soon to be turned into fact.
Maybe good for fishing. You never know.
Never know. Well, sure, we'll be all right.
My question is, I've been hearing that stocks are overinflated. How would the layman know if, you know, say he's got a brokerage account and he's looking at all these numbers and everything, and it doesn't make any sense, you know? But is there any quick indicator that is, you know, because if you're going to drop some coin down on a stock, you know, you want to try to get as low and like buying a car, you know, you want to get your best bang for your buck. So it's overinflated, you know. If you could bring me up to speed, and hopefully the question will help everybody else.
Well, there are two basic ways stocks are valued by the analysts. There's technical analysis and fundamental analysis. And they both have their pluses and minuses, but the reason that we are not stock analysts or individual stock purveyors for the most part,
right,
is because I fundamentally don't trust the market. You can do the best technical analysis you want and the best fundamental analysis you want, but bad things happen to good stocks and good things happen to bad stocks. So I don't put a lot of my confidence level in that. I more look at the overall PE value of the S&P, for instance, but I also look at what money's doing. When people are selling stocks, we tend to buy them. We're basically contrarian types. So right now, you're looking at the overall market on a multi-year tear. Yeah, we did have our one little 20% setback. But if you look at the right. S&P over the last four decades or so, every plateau is higher than the ones before. We're in a long-run equity bull market, and that's why we like to buy the indices and so on, where you get lots and lots and lots of stocks. So we eliminate that right. individual stock risk. But if you want to be a stock picker, you should be pretty well up to date on your both kinds of analysis. And I guess the best I've ever seen for an individual evaluating an individual stock is the process called CAN-SLIM. And that was made up many, many years ago by, I knew I was going to drop the word. Who? I can't think of that. You can Google it. It's CANSLIM, which is an acronym for the different things, the different little factors that they're going to use to analyze the stock. So I'd look that up and try applying it to some things you're looking at and see if it makes any sense.
The other thing to
take... Investors Business Daily, excuse me, just came out.
The other thing you need to look at is what do you think is happening with the economy? Right. So long-term... Do you think we're going to get out of this coronavirus sort of funk we're in and get everyone back to work and resume our pre-COVID growth levels? If you believe that, then stocks are probably more of a bargain right now. If you don't believe that, if you think that this is going to drag on forever and we are not anywhere near getting out of this thing and there is going to be 17 million people unemployed for the foreseeable future, then stocks are probably overvalued right now. So you could make that case either way. And I think you'd have a pretty good case either way right now.
Yeah. Your first decision is to buy or not. Your second decision is what to buy if you're going to.
Correct. And, you know, and that's what I kind of look at is current events, Corona, the virus and how that affects, everybody in general, the lay person, that lives day to day,
Yep.
Yeah.
And
the other thing to take into account, and I don't want to get political here, but you cannot help but mention, do you think Biden or Trump will win the election?
Right.
And then do you think that that outcome will be good or bad for the economy? And
Yes, very important.
Yeah, it's really important. Yeah. I mean, there are some serious different policies being proposed by the Democrats. So if they win, I think that the country is going to look very different. And it's up to you to decide how you feel like that will affect corporate America.
In other words, there's no easy answer to this.
No, there certainly is not.
Especially these days.
No, I understand. One last one, and I'll, I'll hold off until next weekend. I love your program.
Either way,
sure, call us back.
We always love to hear from you.
Yeah, excellent. Y'all have a great weekend, and take care.
Your weather's still cool out there, by the way?
Oh, yeah. I was talking to somebody in Idaho on the Silver Valley, Spokane area, 102.
Ooh!
Wow.
Yeah.
Oof.
And we're talking close to the Canadian border.
No kidding.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, good news for them, it won't last long.
Hopefully.
Yeah, really. All right, take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you much. Y'all take care again.
Thanks. You too. The best part about this wind event we're seeing is that it sucked up all the humidity.
Yeah.
It feels so nice out
beautiful
right
out there today. I'm really loving it. All right, we wanted to mention one more thing about the market, because there's something going on out there that's really, I think, quite significant with housing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You don't have to look much further than D.R. Horton this week. They had a absolutely blowout quarter. They beat earnings by 31% and revenue by 3.6%. And the most surprising thing to me was how they credited their success to millennials moving out of cities and into the suburbs.
How about that?
If you had
grow
told
up
me that,
so fast.
If you had told me that a year ago, I would have told you you're crazy.
Have you heard the commercial that's been going on for maybe a year on and off? I haven't heard it lately, but that line always reminds me. It's about a guy who has kids living at home. He says, oh, they grow up so slowly. What a great line.
That's funny. But yeah, they really had a blowout quarter, and I think that the other home builders are probably going to see similar results. It's just the demand for housing has not subsided during this crazy time.
And they have to build because the supply of used homes is just
non-existent.
Not there.
Yeah, it's everyone is rethinking the way that they're living. Cities have, I don't want to say they've lost their appeal, but in the short term, they certainly seem like a riskier place to inhabit than they were pre-COVID.
Absolutely.
And
at mortgage rates, they're also giving a tailwind to the new housing market.
Yeah, no doubt, being down near 3%, that is a huge boost to the industry, and people want to get them before they're gone. So I think there's just a lot of tailwinds right now, and I don't know if that'll change if we see more long-term unemployment, but it certainly could.
Yeah, and what benefits when we start building a lot of houses? The consumer, the durable sector, the things that, like the refrigerator and the dishwasher and so on, the industrials that make things that will last for a long time, and that sector will boom. And industrials have been just sort of ho-hum lately. Mm-hmm. But you start building a bunch more of these houses, and you're going to see the industrials take off behind it too, especially in the durable goods sector.
And the last number I wanted to talk about was the second quarter GDP. It was bad, but it was expected to be worse.
Yeah, but the media was shocked
to
find out the GDP went down
by 32.9%, even though most people thought it would be closer to 34 or 35%.
Yeah.
It was better than expected, and that's an annualized number. I can't tell you how many times people said that GDP went down that much in the second quarter.
No, it
did not. It is an annualized number, And actually, relative to other countries, we did pretty well. Mexico and Spain saw decreases closer to 55% on an annualized basis in the
second
quarter.
Almost every European country was deeper than ours.
Yeah, that's true. Germany was deeper than
ours. They mostly started with fours, a couple fives.
It was the largest drop on record, and we're not going to see that again. So we knew it was coming. I don't know why everyone acted
surprised.
Well, look
at consumer spending. Over the past 2 months, the spending was up 8.6 a month ago, or 8.7, I think, and we followed that up with a 5.5 or something like that yesterday. People are out there buying again. There is, to quote a certain president, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. Of course, on the virus. That's another story. Anyway, I wanted to bring that up because it's such a hot sector right now, and it portends wonderful things. It puts a lot of people to work. And that's just not building. It's the building and the furnishing and the whole thing. So it's a good thing. All right, we're going to take one more break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have some other kind of cleanup topics to do today. But first, I've got to say this segment sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794 and let Troy do it like I am doing. As I sit here, I saw his little truck in my driveway today, and it always makes me feel good because I come home and everything looks great, and I didn't lift a finger.
That is the best way to do it.
Yep, I like it. All right, some topics of interest that Adam has. Let's touch on a few things.
Yeah, first, this is a little bit of bad news. So far, according to Yelp, this was actually an article on News for Jax, the pandemic has closed more than 130 Jacksonville area businesses forever. This is just the ones that have marked permanently closed on Yelp. So I suspect that number is probably, I'm going to guess 2 to 4 times higher than that. They show 70 restaurants closed for good, 64 retail businesses because of COVID. Just really sad. Small business in particular, it's really just a person or a couple or a group of people who have gotten together to try and make something work, and then to have the government's response to coronavirus shut them down permanently.
You can't open your doors.
Yeah.
But as Adam and I were talking on the break, those of you who've done anything in economics know that there are four factors of production: land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurism. When we were looking at surveying what's happening around here now, and as we get more and more freedom to do things like reopen, some of these places are going to be available for sale or rent. That's the land, and you got to have land to do anything in. The labor, there are people out there wandering around looking for jobs as we speak right now, and labor is not a big problem, which it was not that many months ago. It was a big problem. But capital is very cheap with the rates down, basically zero interest rates. So even if you don't have the greatest credit in the world, the borrowing money is still not a difficult thing. And all we need is that group of entrepreneurs. And I don't think there is any shortage of those in a town that's vibrant like this one. So long run, I'm certainly not at all down on the prospects for Jacksonville, but I sure feel badly for the people who were involuntarily put out of work and lost their life, business, and so on. There's not anything we can do about it except support small businesses that are still open as much as you can. Shop locally for now and look around for empty slots if you're trying to start something.
Yep, good advice. I mean, there will be a lot of opportunity on the other side of this thing, that is for sure. And maybe even during it, because there are industries that have popped up that didn't exist a few months ago.
Yeah, you got any experience in industrial-type cleaning?
Oh.
You can open up a business. Yeah. I promise you by next Friday, you will be booked solid.
No doubt about it. If you can find people and equipment and PPE, that's the tough part. This is actually some good news, and it sounds like bad news to start, but you'll see why in a minute. Caterpillar released earnings this week, and as expected, they were horrible. People are not buying heavy equipment right now. And their stock went down about 5%. It actually has not done that bad. It's right about where it was a year ago. It was down in the high 80s, low 90s, and now it's in the 120s. So really not too bad.
It's still that high.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
So not terrible. The the good news in that is that the one area that they are seeing growth in sales year over year is in Asia. And as it turns out, Asia has led the recovery in Caterpillar equipment after every worldwide recession that we've seen in the last about 10, 20 years. And so the fact that Asia is bouncing back and is in the green or in the black, not in the red, is a pretty good sign for the rest of the world. So hopefully that trend continues and we're just a little bit behind Asia. Hmm. Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Yeah, me too. But, yeah. Maybe the Chinese numbers for GDP aren't all that out of whack after all.
No, I mean, that data would support that. So who knows?
Yeah, there's so many countries, including some over there, that are having this next wave of the virus that I wasn't sure how it's going to be affecting everything. But I tell you, if we don't get our schools open, we're not going back to work around here.
I mean, August 20th is the date that they're right now. Duval is, I mean, they're calling us just about every day at this point. If you have school-aged children, you know what I'm talking about. But our son's school is, they're on the phone with us every day, and they are definitely preparing to open on the 20th.
Hmm. All right, well, good luck. If you asked 100 people, how much money does it take to be wealthy? How many answers do you think you'd get?
20. Did you say 100 people?
100 people.
Oh, I'm sorry. 100 people, yeah.
Well, even if you put it in categories, you'd get at least 20 of them. Well, I wondered how that's changed now in the wake of the virus. So I found a study that was done in two parts, before and after. It was kind of interesting. Average back in January, people said $934,000 in net worth makes you wealthy. I would spend the rest of today and all day tomorrow arguing that that's a drop in the bucket.
I would say that makes you middle class.
Yeah, not even upper middle
class. No, just middle class.
And that's total net worth. That means equity
in
your home
on your
and the
age,
whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly does. I agree. But now, post COVID, it is $655,000.
Wow.
So it appears that people are thinking that, well, maybe relationships and health and money aren't in the right order anymore. Money's moving down the list. And I say, bunk. No, it's not going to get cheaper to be wealthy, people. In fact, inflation is going to start kicking in again.
That's a big 30% decrease in what it takes to be wealthy. That's crazy.
Don't get it. Now, if everybody's thinking so esoterically, I hope somebody gets out there and kicks them in the rear end. All right, how about let's see.
What would you say, though? What would you say?
Truly wealthy?
Yeah.
Whatever I have plus $3
million. I think you can start the conversation at $3 million, but I don't think you can start it anywhere before that.
All right. Well, here's the interesting part. In 2019, the answer was $2.3 million.
Really?
Yeah. Now, what in the heck happened?
That's crazy.
I don't get it, because that's actually sort of realistic.
Yeah.
And that was down from 2018, but that was only 2.4 million. Excuse me, 2017, it was 2.4 million. Now, did this thing that we're in right now change the rules of living?
I don't know. It certainly has not gotten any cheaper to live.
No, it certainly hasn't. 57% said the coronavirus has financially affected them or a close family member. Oh, that didn't surprise me, because you think of all the people who got laid off
yeah,
and all the employees, and that means they have families at home. So I thought that was okay. Now, there's some bright news. 36% said they were likelier to have savings for emergencies and 40% to be saving more in general prior to the pandemic.
You did see the savings rate spike during the last few months.
In fact, that was one of the problems with the stimulus checks. Some people
in
the bank.
Yeah, it was. I think it hit the highest it's ever hit in America.
Yeah, I remember that. You're exactly right. Remember when George Bush sent them out and they came in the mailbox and everybody did the same thing. It didn't really work that well. So I think I got a couple others in here that were interesting too. Financial stress rises. Now, that I do not find at all unusual. 30% of survey respondents reported they or a family member had experienced a salary cut or reduced work hours. 25% said either they or a family member had been furloughed. But who's taking it the hardest is millennials. Now, this actually was one that made a lot of sense to me because their salaries and work hours have been cut more than other people's. Last in, first out, mm-hmm. hiring process. And 2 in 5 say that they or a family member had experienced one of these issues. So the financial stress on a 0 to 100 scale was 45.9 at the end of 19, and in June it was 52.5. Well, that wasn't all that bad. So we're taking it in stride, I would say, overall in the society. But I thought it was interesting. If you aren't setting your sights above $655,000 in total net worth, you're not going to ever be wealthy. That's the truth. There's a commercial on right now. I don't even know if I can finish this in this time. People are surprised that to get $100,000 retirement income, it takes $2.5 million. So invest in this annuity, and you don't have to have that much because they'll give you your money back instead of the earnings on it. That's exactly how it goes. All right, more next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. We will be back here same time next week. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.